From the Atlantic to the Pacific, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We've assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests. And that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. This is the hour when we are going to dig into, some truly spooky stuff. Mass murderers. Serial killers. And, you know, it is Halloween. It's a fun time. But there is this ever-present darkness in the background. And I was reading up on this, the darkness of the human psyche. And I found this story that I'm going to share with you. The story of a man named Vasily Blokhin, a Russian. Vasily Blokhin. He was born January 7th of 1895. And he served in the military under Stalin around World War II. He was born into a peasant family. And some of the early records on him are scant. But apparently he was noted for his pugnaciousness, his mastery of what Joseph Stalin called Chernaya Rabota, which is black work. Assassinations, torture, intimidation, executions done clandestinely. And he got promoted and promoted until he finally became a commandant of a prison at a place called Lubyanka. Well, in April of 1940, Stalin came to Vasily Blokhin. And he said, "We have a prison camp full of Polish prisoners. And I would like to execute them in the most efficient way possible." So Blokhin and Stalin discussed various details. And they began this process of execution. Basically, a Polish prisoner, in most cases an officer, would be brought into a red room right after the sun was setting, into a small antechamber. And there they would positively identify the person, make sure he was who he was supposed to be. And then he was led into an adjoining room, the execution room. The Polish prisoner would go into the room, which had padded walls for soundproofing, and he was standing at the top of a sloping concrete floor with a drain and a hose at the bottom. And the Polish prisoner would stand facing the wall. Behind that prisoner was Vasily Blokhin, dressed in his executioner outfit, a leather butcher's apron, a leather hat, shoulder-length leather gloves. And then without a hearing or any kind of sentence being read or other formalities, Blokhin would walk back behind the person and put his pistol. He preferred to use a German Walther model 225 to the base of the Polish prisoner's skull and fire one shot. So the prisoner would die and then sort of roll down this slope where they would kind of hose it down, and then they would drag the prisoner out a back door, put him on a flatbed truck, and take him to a site where they had about 20-some trenches dug. So one after another, they would bring prisoners in. and Vasily Blokhin would shoot them in the back of the head this way. The very first night, they killed about 300 men. And when it was done, around sunrise, Vasily Blokhin and his assistant sat down and drank vodka. And then they went home, got a good night's rest, and they came back and started over again. And they realized maybe 300 was a little too ambitious. Maybe they should shoot for 250 the next night. They got so efficient that they could kill a man about every 3 minutes this way. Bring a man in, within 3 minutes, Vasily Blokhin, pop him in the back of the head, roll him down, hose it down, take him out, put him on the flatbed truck. From sunset to sunrise, day after day after day, for 28 days. And after 28 days of this, Vasily Blokhin had personally killed 7,000 men. And he is now in the Guinness Book of World Records as the, quote, most prolific executioner, end quote.
Wow.
This is all very well documented. Now, upon completing this execution of 7,000 men over 28 days, working 10 hours at a time, 3 minutes per man, Vasily Blokhin was decorated. But after Stalin died and the power in Russia shifted in various ways, some of the new people who came in despised him, and they eventually stripped some of his decorations and rank. And so he gradually sank into alcoholism and insanity. He lived in an obscure little apartment. And on February 3rd of 1955, he shot himself in the head. Committed suicide at 60 years old. It's pretty fascinating to think about what goes through the mind of a person who is killing for state versus killing for joy, right? But Vasily Blokhin, I'm sure, may have combined the two a little bit. You have to love your work, I suppose. And I started, you know, reading more and more about this dynamic, this contradiction that we have in our society when we say killing is wrong, except under these circumstances when we sanction it. You know. And it's one thing, of course, to put your gun at the back of a man's head and squeeze the trigger versus, just shooting off into the fog of war. Maybe you hit something, maybe you don't. But what does that do to you? Well, you know, a few years ago, I was producing a function, an event here in Asheville. And at one point, an older lady came up to me and she said, "Ah, Joshua, it's so great to finally meet you." She said, "I am a genealogist. And I've been studying your family for years and years. And are you seeing some weird stuff on the record?" Me too. Do we need to pause?
No, I think we're good.
Okay. We have some technical issues tonight we're dealing with in the studio. Probably because we're talking about spooky evil stuff.
True.
You know, it
true.
Happens all the time when we get really dark like this. So she said, I'm a genealogist. And I've been studying your family, and I could tell she was the real deal. She even said she was, related in some way. And she knew a bunch of my different relatives, and she was rattling off names. And I was like, yeah, that's this person, that person. And she said, "Do you know you're related to a serial killer?" And I'm glad she didn't say, "Yeah, it's me. Goodbye. Oh, you're the serial killer." No, she said, "You're related to a serial killer." And I said, "Who is that?" And she gave me a name. Now, I am not going to give this name out on the radio. But I will tell you that when she gave me the name of the serial killer, I recognized the name. And that's because many, many years before, when he had committed his crimes, I remembered his name being in the news. And it had crossed my mind that maybe there was a relation for whatever reason. But, again, I don't want to give the guy's name out. And she said, "Yeah, here's how you're related to this serial killer." And she started telling me about some of the relationships and whatnot. And I saw clearly, I mean, it's like, yep, this guy, he was born in the right place, all the right elements were there. We're going to take a break in a little bit. And when we come back, I'll tell you a little bit more about what I do know about this guy. But I was thinking, if I'm related to a serial killer, and I mean, he's a, you know, cousin type thing, is there a gene for serial killing that I possess in my body? And if that gene is activated, does that mean that I could be a serial killer? We get into this nature versus nurture type thing, because this relative of mine, who is a serial killer, is on death row right now. And I will tell you about his crimes when we come back. Not at all because, you know, I'm trying to celebrate this guy. But how often do you find out that you are somewhat closely related to a serial killer? I'll tell you more when we return. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. It's called Speaking of Strange. Without the slightest noise, waits patiently beside the school to feast on girls and boys. He lunges fiercely through the air as they come out to play, then grabs a couple by the hair and drags them far away. He cracks their bones and snaps their backs and squeezes out their lungs. He chews their thumbs like candy snacks and pulls apart their tongues. He slices their stomachs and bites their hearts and tears their flesh to shreds. He swallows their toes like toasted tarts and gobbles down their heads. Fingers, elbows, hands and knees and arms and legs and feet, he eats them with delight and ease, for every part's a treat. And when the gruesome grisly ghoul has nothing left to chew, he hurries to another school and waits, perhaps for you. Ah, yes, the ghoul from Nightmares. Poems to Trouble Your Sleep by Jack Prelutsky. It's that time of year. It's October. The Halloween season is upon us. We're easing into it. Getting a bit of a late start this year, though. It's already, you know, almost halfway through the month. But, as a matter of fact, let me tell you this, speaking of spooky things. You know, this time of year, we do ghost hunts from time to time. We do ghost hunts at the Asheville Masonic Temple, but it looks like that we are going to have two special ghost hunts this October at the Grove House on Grove Street in downtown Asheville. Now, you might know that as the place where you find some clubs like Scandals Nightclub or the Boiler Room or Club 11, but it's an old 1924 mansion. And we've been talking to the owners, and it looks like we might do some investigations there. I think that, you know, we'll cap it at 50 people. But one on, and these are on Monday nights, because the place is just full of people. There's a lot going on, you know, weekends and even the rest of the week. So if you are interested in participating in a ghost hunt, probably a $25 ghost hunt, which is actually a great deal, $25. Monday the 22nd and Monday the 29th, I should be there both nights. Just go to hauntedasheville.com and we'll keep that info updated as it comes in, if you might want to do an investigation of the Grove House. So, Shelley Wright, I just told everybody I'm apparently related to a serial killer. What do you think about that?
I'm just not shocked.
Mm-hmm. Why are you not surprised by this?
I don't know. You're a spooky guy, kind of creepy. You got all kinds of dark things going on all the time. I guess it's not a real leap.
Well, you know, I saw some kind of program, I recall, where they had like a forensics doctor. And he was also a psychologist, and he would examine serial killers. And he said that to be a serial killer, it seems like you have to have a combination of three things. One, some kind of gene.
Right.
Two, an abusive upbringing. And three, a head injury. And from that, we also have the serial killer test, which this same doctor devised. And I can't describe this on the radio, but there's a test. It's a simple, I guess you would call it, I don't know the word I'm looking for. It's kind of like a reflexology test.
You gave me the serial killer test one time.
Yeah, I guess it's a reflex test that you can, and I've given
a reaction test or a reflex test.
I've given this test to many, many people over the years, and there's only one person who has not passed it 100%. You know who, Forrest?
Who is that, Mr. Warren?
You.
Really?
Yeah. You're the guy who did not 100% pass the serial killer test.
What are you saying, Warren?
I think that.
What are you saying?
I think that you could be a serial killer.
You want to go out back and discuss it?
No, but I do want to go on the record. Now, your girlfriend's looking at me like, really? It's true. I'm breaking this on the radio right now, Kelly. Mm-hmm. your boyfriend is the only guy who has never completely passed the serial killer test. How does that make you feel?
I would probably help him.
I think... I think Forrest might be a serial killer. That's why he doesn't like ketchup. He prefers blood. Right, Forrest?
Of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Okay, so, you know, we can joke about it all night, but I think it's possible that Forrest Connor is a serial killer. And I'm putting this on the record. Look, he looks very uncomfortable right now, doesn't he? He's very tense. Now we're examining your body language, Forrest. So, I don't know. Shelley, you've heard me say this before. I think Forrest could be a serial killer.
Yes.
Now, that said, I don't think he's been abused growing up. And I don't think he's had any significant head trauma. So maybe it's just the potential there. On the other hand, the guy who's related to me, all the factors were in place. I don't want to give out his name, but here is his story. He was born here in North Carolina, and he, at a young age, joined the military. He traveled a little bit with the military, nothing too exotic. I don't think he went abroad or anything. And apparently, when he was in his early 20s, he met a woman at a bar, a married woman, and she somehow agreed to go off into a secluded area with him, at which point he, after, you know, various festivities, strangled her to death. And apparently, he strangled her, he dumped her, and I guess he thought, hey, this is a pretty good deal. So, it continued from there. And that was his modus operandi. He would find women, take them out into some dark, secluded place, and strangle them to death. I don't know how he was eventually caught, but they confirmed that he had killed at least, I think, 8 women. And they strongly suspected that he had killed at least 10 more. So we're talking about the 20 range in terms of victims that we can feel, you know, semi-confident in. He probably killed 20 people. He's on death row right now. He's been on death row for quite a while. And one of the reasons that I don't want to give his name out is because I don't want it getting back to him that this dude related to him is named Joshua Warren, who has a radio show. It kind of reminds me of when I was writing Haunted Asheville. I was traveling around our area, and I wrote this book when I was about 18. I was going around the area, you know, gathering interesting stories. And there is a prison not too far from my house called Craggy Prison, Old Craggy Prison. And it is one of these big, impressive, striking, you know, intimidating-looking fortresses. So I actually was able to arrange, even at the age of 18, for the warden of the current Craggy Prison to come and take me and my girlfriend at the time on a tour of the old Craggy Prison because I was interested in using it as a chapter in Haunted Asheville. So I went on a tour, took a lot of pictures, got some interesting, you know, information. But then I realized if I'm going to continue pursuing this, in order to get some good, juicy stories, I'm going to have to interview people who have been in prison or people who are in prison. And I realized maybe those aren't connections that I want to make at this point in my life. So that's, you know, it reminds me of that when I talk about, yeah, I don't want there to be some type of a communication that arises between me and a guy that I don't know who is a serial killer just because we are related. But we're going to take a break. when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this strange dynamic of what makes a person a serial killer. Maybe Forrest can fill us in. And then I believe we have an update from Kelly about some paranormal media that we'll dig into as well. This is the show where the unusual becomes usual. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Stick around. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Listening to the program where the unusual becomes usual to high strangers around the globe. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. And we're talking about serial killers, mass murderers, and Forrest Connor. How does it all connect? Forrest just raises his eyebrows. Kelly Griffin, you live with this man.
Yes.
In a haunted house. We've talked about that,
mm-hmm.
where creepy things occur. And you sit there. You're in this house with a serial killer watching creepy stuff on TV. Why are you doing this to yourself?
I like the excitement, I guess.
Well, okay, well, what's one of the more interesting things you've seen on television lately? And we do report with you once in a while about paranormal pop culture. Let's get your mouth right up there next to the mic. Pretend it's Forrest's killer lips. You're about to give him a good smooch of his murderous lips. No, really, put the mic up there to your mouth.
Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Right there, baby.
Yeah, there you go. If only we had the internet version of this program, the whole language would change. What have you been watching lately, Kelly?
Paranormal Witness just came out.
Yes. You know what? That show contacted me and asked me if I would be on their program, but I told them, like, I got this contract with the Travel Channel. Things need to be cleared, so, you know, we'll see. But what have you watched on that show? What stands out in your mind? Paranormal Witness on Sci-Fi.
There has been everything this season. They used to do ghost hauntings and things like that.
Right.
You know, but they've had a couple of other ones this season. There's one about Fire in the Sky.
Right, Travis Walton.
Yeah, and they interviewed him. And there was one that really stood out to me, especially because you're talking about serial killers today.
Okay.
the serial killer named Herb Baumeister from Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived on Fox Hollow Farm.
Okay.
He was killing males in the, I think it was in the 90s. I'm not sure exactly what year. But they suspect he killed at least 13 people, if not more.
Mm-hmm.
They had found over 5,000 bone fragments on his property behind his house. Basically, he buried them in his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And those people, they still haven't even identified. They don't even know who they were. But it was males. He was married. He had a wife. And apparently, she didn't suspect a thing. She had no idea. It's a gorgeous house on a nice piece of land. And there was a family that bought it. And they basically got it for a steal. It was cheap. But they disclosed to them that it was his home.
Mm-hmm.
It had been his home. And they just weren't too concerned with it. And weird stuff started happening. Like, they had a pool in the basement, an indoor pool. And there was a lady, the lady was trying to vacuum and clean up, and the vacuum kept being unplugged. And she couldn't figure it out. She thought maybe she had gone too far and yanked it out. And it happened about 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally just blew the whole socket out. And that was like her first encounter with weird things happening. She saw a man in the backyard during the day
mm-hmm.
with a red shirt on that she found out matched the description of Baumeister.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like walking out towards the woods. Things kind of escalated. There was a guy that her husband worked with, the man that bought the house, and he didn't have a place to stay. So they said, invited him over. They have like an apartment that's separate from the house. And so he started staying there. It was a single guy, young. And stuff started happening. One night, the door was like it was being shook just violently, you know, just shaking and shaking. And he would open it up. There was nobody there. And he was terrified, so he went back in, shut the door, and the door basically blew off the hinges, exploded, and it was like wood chips all over the apartment. He was swimming in the pool another time, and something started strangling him under the water. Well, him being a single guy, that was the profile of the kind of guys that the Baumeister had killed.
Okay.
And he killed him in the pool.
Oh, all right. So it all comes together there at
right.
the end. You know, it's funny, you were talking about sockets and electrical things blowing. You were telling me recently, Shelley, right, that you've had a lot of light bulbs blowing at your house.
Yes. I lived in my house for 3 years now, and I have never had to change so many light bulbs in 1 week.
Have you seen anything else ghostly?
Yeah, every now and then I have things happen at the house.
Okay, well, let me tell you ladies a little story that I heard recently. And want to get your opinions on this. I've gotten to the point now where I have investigated so many weird and ghostly things that when people start telling me a story, sometimes I can almost fill in what they're going to say next, you know, because there are certain patterns behind how these things occur. So I was at a party recently, and I met a lady who said that she had a ghost who was showing up in her bedroom at night. And 9 times out of 10, when a woman tells me very sincerely that a ghost is showing up in her bedroom, he's not there to play Yahtzee. I know that, well, okay, here's how she phrased it. She said, well, I woke up one night and he was on top of me and he was getting way too friendly. And I said, well, what did he look like? And she said, he was a Confederate soldier. Because this took place at a house in Georgia. in an area where there had been a lot of activity. So I said, all right, so this Confederate soldier, he appears, he gets on top of you, and he starts assaulting or violating you in some way. And she says, yes. And I said, well, have you ever heard of an incubus? And she said, no. And I explained to her that an incubus is a male spirit that, you know, will come onto a woman and violate her at night. And a succubus is a female who will do the same thing to a man. Forrest, have you ever experienced a succubus?
No.
Would you like to?
Why not?
Well, I know a guy who has experienced, you know the guy.
I know who you're talking about, yes.
And he said that he has a succubus who would come once in a while, and he enjoyed it thoroughly.
Well, he would call her, would he not?
Yes, he said he would actually, you know, wait
call
for
upon
her. He would wait for her to arrive. But women usually say that they don't want this. Men usually say they do, unless it happens to be Papa Bawa. Papa Bawa is in where is it? Zambia or
South America, isn't it?
It's in Africa. Papa Bawa is in Africa. He's a big, black, oily, leathery demon, and he appears at night, and he will take a man from behind and pin him down, and he will violate that man severely. And then when he's done,
tell everybody.
This is the like the worst part of Papa Bawa. When he's done, he will lean down and he will say, "If you don't tell everyone what I have done to you, then I will come back, and it will be twice as bad next time." And then Papa Bawa will leave. And to add insult to injury, right? You've had this happen to you, and now you have to go out and tell everybody. Well, look, we got to take a break. When we come back, I have to tell you the clincher of this story about the woman in Georgia. Because she said that she had this soldier who was coming at night and assaulting her. And this went on for 14 years until something happened that I have never heard before. I've been collecting stories the better part of 20 years. I have never heard before what she told me, and I'm going to tell you when we come back. I'm Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Could not pay is just too horrible to say. The trolls who never brush their teeth had pointy chins with beards beneath, all full of moss and dried up crud, like soft-boiled eggs and sausage blood. Nowadays we don't hear much of ghastly trolls with beards and such, yet we're still stopped and we pay tolls, but just to ordinary souls. Or are they ordinary souls? Could it be that some are trolls? That's a new book my sister got me. It's called The Monsterologist, A Memoir in Rhyme. You know, Shelley, it actually has a little section here, if I can find it now, where there is a letter from Count Dracula. And he's writing from Bran Castle. There, Bran, Transylvania. And I saw that and I was like, hey, we were there.
Hey, I got strangled
there. Gosh, the Dark 30 hour is coming up next hour. And now that is, you know, the hour when we get really down and dirty. And, you know, it's not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So, you know, keep that in mind. Before the break, we were talking about incubuses. I guess you'd call them incubi, maybe. Succubuses, succubi, inky-sucky things. And how I recently met a woman. This is a true story. She told me that she lived in a house in Georgia, in an area that was active for, you know, Civil War-type activity, and that this Civil War soldier, decked in gray, was, you know, getting on top of her at night. And this went on for 14 years. Her husband was there with me. And he told me, he said, you know, the first time she told me this happened, I thought she was absolutely crazy. He said, until a few months later, I woke up one night when I was sleeping in that room by myself, and I opened my eyes, and there he was, standing at the foot of the bed. And I said, well, did you think, like, somebody had broken into your house, and, you know, they're dressed up as a Confederate soldier? And he said, no, he said he was, you know, translucent. You could see through him. It was obvious this was some kind of a ghost. So he said he looked at the ghost, and he said, what do you want? And at that point, the ghost just turned and walked away. It was gone, just dissolved. So at that point, he knew that his wife was apparently telling the truth. So 14 years of this experience off and on. One night, she says she's in bed. She's not in the mood for this sort of thing. Here he appears. Oh, God, here we go again. The ghost climbs on top of her. She feels pinned down. She feels trapped. She feels like she can't do anything. And she starts thinking, help me, help me, help me. And here's the twist that I've never heard before in my 20 years of doing ghost research. Behind this ghost appears a second ghost. It is the ghost of a Confederate officer with all the garb and decorations of an officer. The officer comes up to the ghost on top of her, who she said clearly is just like an enlisted man, a lower level man. He grabs the ghost, throws the ghost away. She sits up and she sees the officer grab the ghost again and drag him off into the wall, and they disappear. And it never happened again. So this woman claims with absolute sincerity that she saw a superior ghost come out and rescue her from the lower ranking ghost. What do you think of that, Shelley Wright?
I have never heard of anything like that. Yeah. I mean, I've always felt protective things around me, been protected by things, but I've never heard of that happening. Another ghost coming out and dragging another one away. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
That is way cool.
And she was absolutely sincere and certain, and, you know, she believed what she was saying.
That 14 years?
Yeah.
I don't understand that. 14 years. This
Why
woman.
Not move?
Why not move? Why not get somebody else in there to put a stop to it?
Yeah. Well, that was the story, and now you've heard it. So we are up on the end of this hour, and when we come back, yes, it will finally be that time, the Dark 30 hour. This is when we dig into the most outrageous, crazy, controversial stuff. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. I'm Joshua P. Warren. If it's for you, stick around. You're listening to the show where the unusual becomes usual. Speaking of strange.